Hello, friends, and welcome to another episode of Bat Flips and Maple Dips. My name's Clayton Croker. Justin Anderson is 2 feet away from me to my left. We're in Saskatoon. Of course, out in Nova Scotia, we got Patrick Marsh. How's the Maritimes going, bud?
They are fantastic. It's starting to get cool out. The leaves are dropping. Everybody's got pumpkins out getting ready for Halloween. I love it.
Just a heads up, all three of us are extremely tired today. And it's one of those tired feelings where everything is goofy and funny. So we might go off the rails this episode. Just a heads up. So if halfway through you're listening and you're like, what the fuck is going on? That's why. We're all running on fumes. We're all pretty tired. Had zero sleep yesterday, coaching football, doing yard work. You've been curling up a storm, Justin. Patrick's been doing his new job, getting used to hours. So zombie show today. It's always kind of fun when everyone's tired, though. Am I the only one in that boat?
Where am I?
I don't even know what's going on right now. Are we doing a podcast right now, or am I just talking to myself?
Radio is the best when people are tired because, again, they don't really think about what they're saying. They just say it, and it ends up being so hilarious. When you're awake and wired and you're ready to go, sometimes you kind of overdo it a bit, you overplan it, and it's not organic. And when you're super, super tired, you're just like, well, let's just wing it. I don't care. I just want to go back to bed. So it should be a fun one. Wherever you're listening, thanks for listening. Anchor, iTunes, Spotify, Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, all that fun stuff. Give us a review on there too. You give us a review, it pops up. More people listen, more people find the podcast, and we can get a bigger community here. Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram. Make sure you like us. Make sure you follow us. Make sure you comment on our shit. We're talking playoffs because the Nationals. How about them Nationals?
Wow.
Don't want to say a toe to so. The Nationals get past the Dodgers. They're going all the way. We got some more grades to give out as well. This time we're going for the infield. And, well, we got some good grades and we got some bad grades. Also, though, I want to start this podcast off by giving a quick shout-out to the guy who used a fake ID that said McLovin. Did you guys hear about this guy in the States?
Yeah, I did hear about that.
He used McLovin's ID, like the actual one from the movie Superbad. Just McLovin, the Irish R&B singer, you know? Like, have you guys ever used a fake ID before? Patrick, were you a fake ID guy?
Oh, you can't see it, but I was, the whole time I was nodding my head. And then when you asked that question, I shook my head. And then I realized, this is radio. What the fuck am I doing?
Oh, yeah, no. See, this is the tiredness kicking in. I like it.
I've never used a fake ID, and I don't think I really had a drink until I turned 19. I was that dude.
Holy. Justin?
Never used a fake, no. The good thing about living in Lloydminster is that in Alberta, the legal drinking age is 18, so I got to celebrate two birthdays of legalization, because one year I just walked across the Alberta side, and next year I was just drank at my house.
Bunch of nerds over here.
Yeah, I was never really into partying too much until grade 12,
the
year before I turned 18, basically. I was too busy with sports to have time for partying, playing soccer and curling and, yeah, all the works.
Well,
so
I was busy with sports too, but you always got to make time for some rye boys.
I made time for playing board games and video games.
You are way too hardcore. I had a fake ID when I lived in Chilliwack playing junior football.
How old were you at the time?
I was 17.
Okay.
And the drinking age out there is 19.
Yeah.
And my buddy looked exactly like me. In the Chilliwack newspaper, they called us the football version of Henrik and Daniel. Like, we looked exactly like them. We were so ginger. I just use his ID because on IDs, they say hair color.
Red.
And if it says red and you have red hair, they don't even look at the photo. They're just like, oh, okay, red hair, whatever. So it's like the one perk to being ginger is you can just get a fake ID from anyone that's drinking age. Ginger. Just grab their old one. Really, guys? No good fake ID stories?
None, sorry.
No, but can I make an awesome segue and say that, Clayton, I've been thinking a lot about who you remind me of the last, like, year and a half. And this is what I've ended up with. You are like the love child of Ham from The Sandlot.
Yep.
And John Blutoe Blutarski from National Lampoon's Animal House.
Oh, yeah. That's pretty spot on, actually.
Jeez.
That's pretty spot on.
It's uncanny.
Yeah, you mix in some Jim from The Office with my pranks and dry sense of humor, and yeah, that's pretty much it. Good. I don't mind that.
Can I ask you one quick question? Okay, so when you're like at the at your like actual work office, do you sometimes look away and kind of do the gym face thinking about what a camera, like if there was a camera, like will you segue to yourself to gym face
at work, at my house, at football practice, 24/7 I'm looking at pretend cameras. Like I've seen The Office, no word of a lie, like 35 times through.
Yeah,
I've seen that show so much. Brooklyn Nine-Nine, I'm starting to watch a little bit more in The Office because I'm getting a little, I just know every line to The Office.
Yeah.
But yeah. I don't know about you guys, but whenever I want to start a new show, I watch one episode and then I'm like, okay, back to The Office. I never watch any new things. I just, so always end up crushing The Office.
That's like, one reason I got rid of Netflix is so I would stop watching The Office.
My life is an infinite loop of The Office.
One quick fake ID story here again, and this is in Chilliwack. There was four redheads on our team, and we would just use the same ID at the bar. So one buddy would go in and use the ID. We'd meet him at the back. He would give the ID to one of us. We would go back to the front to use the ID, meet him in the back again. It worked every time.
Jeez.
The bouncer had no idea. And we didn't even wait like 10 minutes. We would go like 2 minutes.
Just cycle
like
it.
Back to back as to back to back. Bouncers don't care. Like, that's the thing about bouncers. They're just big guys and they don't care.
Red hair.
Yeah. They probably just feel bad for us because we're ginger, honestly. Do you guys want to talk some baseball? Anything else
you guys
want
to talk about? Baseball.
Yeah, some baseball stuff. The playoffs have been fantastic so far.
Yeah.
The Washington Nationals.
My God.
Did anyone see them sweeping the St. Louis Cardinals? We had them beating the St. Louis Cardinals if they got past the Dodgers, which they did.
You guys, I picked the Cardinals, which I feel bad about now. Mm-hmm. But yeah.
Dead
if
wrong.
If we check the tape and we go back, called it!
Yeah, so did Clayton.
I called it.
I didn't say sweep, though. Did you say sweep?
Oh, I'm pretty sure I said something along the lines of stomp.
Mm-hmm.
Close enough.
It's not.
I know when we were talking wild card at the end of the year, all of us were in agreement that they had like a rotation that could be dangerous, like that we didn't want to face the Nationals if they got through that wild card game, and they showed why, right? Like they're good. I mean, I kind of picked the Cardinals to be different last week, but I'm not mad about either team winning.
It seems like in playoff baseball, everyone focuses on the bullpens. No one really focuses on the starting rotation. It's all about the bullpens and, oh, how deep is their bullpen? Look how many bullpen guys they have, because in the playoffs, you always go to your bullpen. So I think Washington flew under the radar with their awesome rotation. Like Steven Strasburg, man.
Unreal.
Has he had a great season followed by a great playoff run as well. Mm-hmm. Patrick, I'll ask you this because you're out east. Do you feel sad or happy being that this used to be the Expos? Like, are you kind of like, oh, yeah, the Expos finally made it? Or are you like, oh, what could have been?
I mean, it's a great question because I think the Nationals are an extremely unpopular team in Canada because they used to be the Expos. I'm actually going to sidestep this question for a second and say...
Trudeau over here, sidestepping the question. Wow.
Hold on. I just want to say this talking point that has been coming up about players taking paternity leave in the middle of the playoffs.
Yeah.
Everybody out there who criticized... it was Daniel Hudson, right?
It was.
Everybody who criticized... him for taking paternity leave for the birth of his child is an asshole, a complete asshole. Okay. You all, like, some people only ever have one child. Okay. And it is a special moment, and no, I'm not a parent, but speaking as a former baby myself, I enjoyed the fact that my parents were both present at my birth. Well, I guess my mom had to be, but you get what I'm saying. Like, this is a definitive moment in Daniel Hudson's life, and as important as his job is, you know, if any other person has a job and they take time off to go see the birth of their child, nobody cares. But all of a sudden, a bullpen guy in Washington who plays for the Nationals, it just blows my fucking mind. I'm sorry, Mrs. Anderson. I said the F word. I apologize. I'm putting a dollar in the swear jar. But this is a mini rant. I can't stand it. If you criticize Daniel Hudson for taking paternity leave, you are an asshole.
That's full stop. That's former Blue Jay Daniel Hudson to you?
That's right. Former Blue Jays legend.
Who would have predicted that when we traded Daniel Hudson to the Nationals that he would be closing games them in the playoffs?
Yeah. Like, another good move there, Shapiro and Atkins. Way to go. It's almost as if they're up to something, boys.
I had a drink every time I heard that.
We took a left turn there from Expos Talk to Paternity Leaf. Yeah. That was a nice segue there, Patrick. Not a lot of people could do that.
I was just really upset about it.
Yeah, that was something that I saw on Twitter this weekend, too, when I was briefly checking. And I was like, come on, man. Yeah.
All right, so moral of the story here, Expos fans are kind of happy that the Nationals are in the World Series.
I mean, I'd say mixed reviews.
Yeah, can they win without Bryce?
Yeah, I think they can, and I think it'd be hilarious if they did.
Patrick, are they winning without Bryce?
I'm vigorously rooting in favor of the Nationals winning the World Series now because I want it to happen, because I want that narrative to continue forever.
Oh, do you guys remember in spring training when they were first interviewing Bryce Harper and he talked about how he was like, yeah, we're going to bring a championship back to D.C. And then he slipped up and it's like, wouldn't that be hilarious? How many times will that soundbite be played if Washington does win? It's like, we did it, Bryce.
He called it.
We did it.
I think we're going to cheer for the Nationals because, well, if the Astros win, I kind of want the Astros to go back to back. But if the Yankees end up winning the ALCS, I think everybody in Canada will be cheering.
Everybody who's not a Yankee fan.
Washington,
for Washington.
Let's get to the ALCS, shall we?
Yeah.
Because, the Cardinals look like dump. The Nationals look great. This ALCS is going to get interesting because these starting rotations are just going at each other right now. The lineups are both great. Right now, the Astros have that 2-1 lead, but I feel like the Yankees play better when the pressure's on because they have that veteran lace the lineup. Justin, are you seeing the Yankees coming back to dominate this series, or is Houston going to keep it rolling?
It's a good question. I mean, we've got, four games left in this series now? Yeah, and there's two at Yankee Stadium and two in Houston because MLB does that 2-3-2 format.
Mm-hmm.
So the Yankees still have two more home games in a row coming up here. If they can take one or both of those, they've got a good shot. I think for them to win, they're going to have to figure out Houston's rotation. They're going to have, I think it's Greinke tomorrow against Tanaka again, same matchup as game one. And Tanaka rolled over the Astros lineup in game one. It's going to come down to starting pitching, like you were saying, like the rotations have been going at it. So it's going to come down to whose lineup figures out the opposing pitching staff first.
Patrick, are the Yankees coming back here or are they done?
Best thing that could have happened to the Yankees was today's game being rained out because it just totally takes the wind out of the sails of the Astros. They were coming in hot up 2-1, and now they got to wait. Honestly, if the Astros win game four, I think it's over. It's all over. I don't know. Like, I don't see these Yankees as being equally as resilient as the old Yankees of the 90s. I think they're going to be very easily tipped over. And I think if they can't get, like a complete game shutout out of their starter. So I guess you guys said it was Tanaka for game four.
Yep.
Why are they rolling with such a short rotation?
Day off pushes everybody back. It'll be basically full day's rest. So
then why the fuck are the Astros starting Greinke when they
same starters as game one.
Is there anybody else?
It doesn't really matter. Greinke's a pretty good pitcher.
He's a pretty good pitcher.
Yeah,
he is, but he's had some doo-doo starts here at the end of September and then a couple in the postseason so far.
This one rain delay game might be pretty good for the Astros if they want to move up Gerrit Cole. If the Yankees win this game and they tie it 2-2, theoretically they could come back to Cole on some pretty short rest. And if they want to get that 3-2 lead, because they got Verlander in the hole as well. So, that's the thing about the Astros. Their starting rotation is dangerous. Sure, the Yankees have Tanaka and Cerevino, but, I mean, those big three there that they have with Greinke, Verlander, and Gerrit Cole. Gerrit Cole's unhittable right now. Remember Madison Bumgarner for the Giants back in, I want to say, 2012?
Yeah, Bumgarner 2010, 2012, and 2014, wasn't it?
Bumgarner was unhittable. This is what Gerrit Cole looks like right now. He looks like a Bumgarner.
Yeah.
Because,
a mad bum.
Yeah, well, mad bum, he really kind of fell off a cliff after 2015. But Gerrit Cole, I mean, I still can't get over that video showing his two-seamer and his fastball and, how much different they looked, side by side.
It's incredible.
It's not even fair for the hitters. So I think, again, the pitching is huge in this, but who has the better lineup between the two, would you say, Justin?
I would say the Astros have a more experienced lineup, but in terms of just like sheer power, it's got to be the Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And in the Yankees stadium, that's going to be big for the Yankees, obviously, because
short right
it's
field
a
porch.
Home run stadium. But in Houston,
312-foot fly balls are home runs there.
In Houston, it's different. So like, again,
Troy Tulowitzki.
Yeah, the ballparks are way different. They're playing a factor in this series. The lineups, the pitching. I mean, I like this series a lot, and I don't really say that with the Yankees a lot because I hate watching the Yankees. Oh, but final predictions: what's this series going to end at?
Houston in six.
Houston in five.
Yankees in seven. I think the Yankees are going to come back and beat them. I don't know. I think that Garrett Cole is going to get another win for Houston. And I think Verlander and Greinke are going to struggle. But I don't know. That's just me. Another thing kind of going on right now in the playoffs, pitch tipping. Yeah. Seems like everyone's pitch tipping. And that's been a big topic of discussion after every single game. Do you guys like pitch tipping? Like, do you like it when teams call each other out for pitch tipping or if they use that? Like, do you have a problem with that?
I don't care. It's baseball. Strategy.
Yeah, it's part of the game. Learn how to hide your pitches. If you suck at it, don't do it. This is what made Marco Estrada so good those couple seasons, because he perfected his deceptive delivery. He made his changeup and his fastball look identical, and nobody could hit off of him. And now on the kind of the other end of the spectrum, Tyler Glasnow got the snot hit out of him just because he kept tipping off his pitches. The same thing happened to Trent Thornton this year, too. He was tipping his pitches, and once he figured out the problem, he started to pitch better. Just don't do it, and don't be mad at anybody because you're doing it. You're responsible for doing it, so don't fucking do it.
It's like David Price says, if you don't like it, be better.
Yeah.
That is the best line, I think, to date, ever.
Yeah.
If you don't like it, be better. Yeah. And that's something that everyone, not just in baseball but in life, has to realize. If you don't like it, be better. Looked at you, Atkins and Shapiro. Let's get to some grading, shall we? We graded the outfielders on last week's podcast, and it was gross. Our infield grades, though, we got a couple good ones out there. The Jays infield, it's got some promise. It also has a couple holes, but for the most part, it is built for success. We're going to break it down into some different categories as well, kind of like yesterday or kind of like last week. The clear returnees, the guys who will be back next year, the guys who are kind of on the bubble, and the guys who will be riding the pine, and the guys who we will never see again. Let's get to the guys who are actually going to be on the team for a long, long time. First up, Vladdy Jr. A lot of questions about his defense coming into this season, and yeah, sure, he had a couple errors, and his defensive numbers weren't that great, but he was making big plays at third. Like, he was making some exciting plays, and he has an absolute hose. When it comes to his bat, everyone knows, you know, he's got a great bat. He got off to a really, really slow start. But Vladdy Jr., we'll start with you, Patrick. What are you going to be giving him for a grade?
I mean, if we boil it all down, C+. Here's the thing. Just let me say what I have to say. If you look at his performance in April and May, and then again in August and September, or not August and September, just September, he was doing this thing where he was just swinging at stuff outside the zone unnecessarily because he wanted to get that big hit, and he let a lot of walks go because he was trying to make contact. And he did make a lot of contact. The problem is that they didn't drop for base hits. They were pop outs or line outs or ground outs. And I wouldn't say that I was disappointed, because he still put up, you know, pretty good numbers for a 20-year-old. You know, I expected him to have a season as good as what Alvarez had in Houston. Maybe not Alonso in New York, because that guy appears to be some sort of freak of nature. But, you know, Alvarez is 22 and Alonso is 24, and those years make a huge difference when it comes to your discipline at the plate. So maybe I need to be a little softer on Guerrero. The reckless swinging has to stop in order for him to really achieve elite status as a hitter. He still has an elite eye. Obviously, he's learned a lot from his dad. The other thing is his conditioning. I don't want to harp on the same talking points that other pundits are going to harp on all off season, but if he comes in working on his conditioning the way that he's already said that he's going to, I think next year is going to be really interesting. And I think he's going to have the biggest jump as far as improvement goes. So I'm going to start with a C+, just because he did start off super slow. And we can't just forget about that and pretend it didn't happen. So room for improvement.
I'm going to go B. Because of the expectations that were placed upon him coming into the season and how everyone thought, yeah, he's going to hit 350 and crush 30 home runs, I think we can grade him a little bit harsh based on that. Yeah, I mean, if he wants to stay at third base, he does have to follow that conditioning plan that they have laid out for him. Because if you can't have a kid this big stay at third base for long, he's just going to get wore out. And we saw it a lot with the off days that were probably a result of him just not being in great shape and needing some days off to recover. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but I know when you're 250 pounds, it's rough on your joints when you're running around with that much weight on top of them. So mm-hmm. to be, especially on like the hard turf at Rogers Center, I hate to use the turf as an excuse like Harold Reynolds in the playoffs. But it is, it's a thing. It's hard to run on. It's hard to plan every day. And having a guy that big running at full speed, he's not a slow guy by any means. And if he can lose some weight, I think he can be a pretty good player. So hopefully, yeah, I hope you're right, Patrick. I hope he sticks to that plan that they have laid out for him. I do not agree with you in the fact that I think he's a reckless swinger. I mean, we see Teoscar Hernandez strike out a third of the time, and Vladdy only strikes out about 18% of the time, so it's almost half of what Teoscar does. Yeah, there are times when he does take those reckless swings, but it's not three in a row like guys like Hernandez or Grichuk do, where you just know he's going to strike out.
Yeah, that's fair.
Yeah, for sure. But I mean, you are right though. Like he is expanding the zone, which is something that his dad used to do a lot of. So I think another year of experience and getting into better shape will take Vladdy from a B to an A next year.
He hit 272. His yep. on base was 339. He had 69 RBIs. His nice. WAR wasn't terrible, 0.4.
Yeah,
could be better. Definitely could be better.
Yeah.
But I mean, 272 with an on base at 339, and I'm going to give him bonus points for his home run derby performance because that was just sick. I'm giving him a
counted.
B plus. Okay. And the reason he gets the plus for me is his defense was way, way better than everyone thought it was going to be. Yeah. Everyone thought he was going to be a joke at third. Mm-hmm. He was definitely holding his own at third base.
I have one number to put out for you guys, 49.6%. Why do you think that would be?
Was that your average in high school?
Hey-o. No, that's the percentage of Vladdy's balls in play that were ground balls, about half of them.
Wow.
So it doesn't matter when you're hitting the ball 110 miles per hour off the bat. If it's all going into the ground, that's why his power numbers were low.
Mm-hmm.
Home runs per fly ball, totally league average. But, I mean, if he were to put more fly balls and more balls in play as a fly ball and a line drive instead of a ground ball, he would have had a lot more base hits. That's why his power numbers were low. Just because he was hitting balls on the ground.
Next up here, Kevon Biggio, he hit 234, but his on base was 364.
What a beauty.
Even though he struck out 28.6% of the time.
Mm-hmm.
That's weird. How can your on base be 364 when you're striking out that much?
He walks 16.5% of the time.
This guy walks a lot, which should be factored in here to the grades. His WAR was 2.4. Kevon Biggio had a hot start, kind of faded a little bit. So Justin, we'll let you start with Biggio.
Yeah, sure. The big differences even between Biggio and Vladdy, they're BABIP both the same, 308 versus 309. The difference in Kevin's numbers is that 25% of his balls were on the ground, so half of what Vladdy did, and he had 47% fly ball rate, 27.6% line drive rate. So he gets balls in the air, which is a big difference between him and Vladimir Guerrero Jr. And that is a big difference why Kevin was able to hit 16 home runs. I was looking at projections. 16 home runs in less time than Vladdy did, while also stealing 14 bases. So he contributed in a lot more ways than Vladdy. His defense, much better than Vladdy's, obviously contributed with a lot of stolen bases and the walks. Yeah, really the big difference between him and Vladdy is just the power numbers. Kevin was hitting for more power and keeping the balls in the air. I'm going to give him a B+.
Patrick, what are you giving Biggio?
I'm giving him an A-, and I think that he was our rookie of the year.
Agreed.
If you, Justin laid it all out pretty clearly. One thing that I'm interested in noting is that Kevon only played 100 games this year. He only had 430 plate appearances. So, like, I think if it's like if you play 150 games or something like that, you should crack something around 600 plate appearances. So I'd love to see Kevon Biggio get that many plate appearances in 2020, because I think these numbers would be staggering if he had a chance to actually play like a full season with the Jays. Mm-hmm. Even if he changed absolutely nothing in his game whatsoever and got those extra 170 plate appearances, he would still generate 22 home runs and something around like 60-ish RBI. Yeah. But he would also have stolen around 20 bases, and he would definitely be getting consideration for Rookie of the Year if he had played the full season. That being said, we're not going to pretend like we can extrapolate these numbers. Players change year to year. I will say he's got the best plate vision of anybody on the team. I think it's better than Justin Smoke's, who's declined a little bit in the last couple of years. That on-base potential is there. He could be the number four hitter that we desperately need in this lineup, which means we can say goodbye to Teoscar Hernandez or Rowdy Tellez in that spot. Put Cavan in a cleanup. Man, I think he would pull Edwin Encarnacion numbers. He's got the power.
So what's his grade?
Oh, sorry, A-.
A-, okay.
Yeah.
I'm giving him a B+. Same grade as Vladdy. Had a pretty good year. His defense is great.
Just one more thing. Go ahead, Clayton. You finish up here.
I'm done.
Oh, you're done already?
Yeah.
Okay,
I'm
cool.
Short and sweet here, boys.
Nice. I just wanted to ask you guys a prediction question for Cavan. So we saw him hit 16 home runs and steal 14 bases this year. Do you think he's a guy who can hit 30 home runs and steal 30 bases in a year?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Maybe not next year, but in a couple years, yeah.
Yeah, so I love what Patrick's point is there about putting him in the cleanup hole. The only thing I like about guys who get on base and steal bases is that they bat before the cleanup hitter.
Mm-hmm.
I'm thinking the Jays kind of had a good thing going when they had Bo leading off, followed by Cavan, and then followed by Vladdy, 1-2-3.
Yeah.
I think that's a pretty good crew. I'd almost even put Vladdy in the two hole instead of and put Cavan behind him and kind of have like the old days where Donaldson hit before Bautista.
I was just about to bring that
up. I would kind of put Cavan in more of the Bautista position in that regard, mm-hmm. because he actually gets the ball in the air.
Yeah.
Whereas Vladdy is a guy who, if Bo's on base, he's going to get pitches to hit. And he's that guy who has like that double potential,
mm-hmm.
and also the walk numbers too. And of course, so does Cavan. So, I mean, they're kind of interchangeable there. But then you've got the guy in Biggio below him who's a left-handed hitter and can hit for some pop, right? So I think they can kind of flip-flop Vladdy and Cavan between the two and three hole, depending on what the other team's pitcher is. Like if you have a lefty on the mound, maybe you put Cavan in the two hole and flip Vladdy at number three or something like that. So I think we have kind of an embarrassment of riches with those three guys.
Exactly.
Though.
It doesn't really matter where we put him other than Vladdy leadoff. He's not going to be batting leadoff, but we got a couple guys we can rotate at number
but
one
now
and
that
number
you,
two.
Now that you bring it up, Justin, the idea of putting Gurriel in at fourth is tantalizing because he clearly has developed the best like power stroke so far.
Sure.
Like he is definitely... He definitely exceeded everybody's expectations as far as power last year. I would love to see him bat cleanup.
That's a good point.
Especially with all those deadly hitters in front of him.
Yeah, and you bring up a good point there too, because we all know that Gurriel is not going to be the guy who's going to take a walk either. So putting him in the four hole, it doesn't guarantee that at least one player ahead of him is going to get on base, but there's a pretty good chance of it. And then at least you have him, even if he strikes out, you know that he's doing it with at least there's runners on base.
Yeah.
So I don't know. I kind of like that too. I think that's a good thing to try. And then if you have a guy like Tellez or Hernandez in the fifth spot, at least you have some more power down there as well too.
Next up here, we got Danny Jansen, another highly touted young guy we have. We've been looking forward to this guy being the future behind the plate for a long time. His offense was bad this year. Let's just be honest.
Yeah.
At times, he would go streaking.
He had that one stretch.
And it would be like, holy shit.
Whatever it was.
If Danny can keep this up, we're a dangerous team. The thing is, he could not keep it up. He strikes out a little bit more than he should. His WAR is great, 1.4, 13 dingers.
It's
but
defensive
yeah,
WAR.
His average was 207. Like, here's the thing, though. He started off the season horrible when it came to defense. He was letting pass balls by like no man's business. He couldn't throw anyone out. He really turned it around after the first month. Like, as a former catcher, I was on his case at the start of the year.
Yeah.
Because it was just bad. And I know you're a rookie, but you're a Major League Baseball player. Figure it out. He really did figure it out. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give Danny Jansen a C+. Patrick, what are you giving Danny?
C-. I was extremely disappointed with his performance at the plate. You can't hit 200. You can't just crawl over the Mendoza line and then expect to hold your spot. And we'll talk a little bit more about that later. Spoiler. I will say he is developing a better eye at the plate with regards to how he selects what he hits. He's never going to be the guy to steal bases, but he's got power upside, which is kind of the identity of the Jays for the last 5 years, it seems. Tons of power upside, can't steal a base for shit.
Yeah.
But yeah, all of his WAR this year was like defensive. He calls a great game. I know it's something we don't talk about a lot, and we were kind of spoiled by the fact that we had Russell Martin behind the plate for a few years there. And Russell calls a game like nobody else that I've seen in a Jays uniform. But I think Danny has the potential to surpass that. He just needs to get his hitting in order, because this was bad, and he may end up getting passed on the depth chart if he doesn't fix this.
For sure. No, I would agree with you, Patrick. Like April, May, he hit 182 and then 143 over the first 2 months of the season. From June, July, and August, though, his average was in the 240s in all three of those months before he dipped back down to 182 in September and October. So we kind of have to hope that he's more of that 240 guy. And I think that's kind of Danny's ceiling, or a likely spot for hitting for average. I think he's somewhere between like a 225 and a 250 kind of hitter. But you did mention, yeah, he's got that power stroke too. Hit 13 home runs this year. And I thought at times it looked like he could be a guy who could hit 20 home runs for us. If you can get 20 home runs from your catcher, Danny played in 107 games. So Reese McGuire, Luke Mealy stole about 50 games from him, which is totally fair. He didn't deserve to play 130 games this year because of how he played. But yeah, you mentioned the great game calling. He's got the ability to take walks. And his defense, like Clayton, you mentioned too, like he was in the top 10 in all of baseball for defensive runs saved this year,
mm-hmm.
Which is no slouch for a rookie catcher. So
and how he started too, yeah. The fact that he crept up into the top 10 because it was a bad first 3 weeks.
I'm giving Danny Jansen a B- because of his defense and the amount of effort that it takes for a rookie catcher to learn not only the pitching staff, but the Jays used like 30 different pitchers this year. So for him to have to learn the repertoire of 30 different people while also improving his defense, props to John Schneider for helping him with that as well. B- for me, just because of the amount of the work he put in.
I love the fact you threw the variables in there instead of just looking at the numbers, Justin.
Yeah.
I'm proud of you.
Thanks, buddy.
I'm very, very proud of you. Next up, Bo Bichette for me, A++. He's the fucking guy. I love him. Bo Bichette, A++. End of story. Justin, take it away.
I'm going to give Bo an A-.
How dare you?
Purely because of some laziness on defense at times. I think he's got a potential to be like a gold glove defender. Like there are times when you know that Bo is like going for the ball, and you're like, yeah, he's going to get that. He'll be fine. There's other times where he just airmails a routine throw. It's almost like he just doesn't think enough on some throws. He's just like, oh, this is routine. And then he just kind of does without thinking, without kind of putting in that full step throw, whatever, his full motion. So I'm giving them that A, or it's the A-. Yeah, A-, just because of that, the defensive kind of lackadaisical attitude. But I mean, we saw him for 46 games, so I almost feel like an A is a little bit too high even, but we did see a ton from him. Like, we know he's going to be a guy who strikes out lots. He'll hit home runs, he'll steal bases. But I also want to see him play that defense that we expect a shortstop to play, because there are guys coming up like Jordan Groshans who are better defenders perhaps than Bo. He's going to have to show that he can play great defense to be that shortstop forever. I hope he does. I think he will.
I'm sorry, but I'm over this whole Groshans over
shit. I know you're over it.
like Bulba Shett came in and proved it on day one, guys. Yeah. Proved that he can be our big league shortstop. And we're sitting here talking about Jordan Groshans, who is a great player, I'm sure. But he's just a prospect at this point, okay? He's still in, what, double A, single A ball?
He's in high A ball.
And so we're talking about a guy who's in high A right now, possibly taking over for a guy who not just lit the Jays on fire, but the whole league. Yeah. Everyone was talking about Bulba Shett.
200 at-bats. Show me it over 600, and I'll give him the mantle forever. I think he's going to be the shortstop for a long time. I think Groshans will play third base, and Vladdy's going to go to first
base. That's what I think, too.
Yeah. But, I mean, Groshans as a defender, I think, right now is more technically sound than Bo, just in the over the of what I've seen in film and the scouting reports for both guys. I think Bo has a little bit of a ways to go to just get to that consistent level. I just want to see it consistently. He's got all the tools to be great. Patrick?
I'm giving Bo B+, and the only reason why I don't give him an A is exactly why you, what you just laid out with regards to giving him an A. There was a little bit of that lackadaisical attitude on defense. But that being said, holy shit, guys. His OBP was 358. Him and Kavan together are going to be a deadly tandem.
I say like, 1-2-3 with him and Vladdy and Kavan. Greasy man, on base percentage.
It's just insane. With these four stars, and they're all going to be stars, in Bichett, Biggio, Gurriel, and Guerrero, I mean, that the first four in our lineup are going to be really fucking good for a long time. And I'm not going to want to face them if I'm the Yankees or the Red Sox, because there's really not an answer to Bo Bichett. I mean, you could walk him, but then he gets on base, and he's got the ability to steal bases. He didn't really get too much of a chance in his 46 games, but I think I don't think we've seen peak Bo Bichett yet. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if his average dropped 30 points and he ended up settling around 280. But even then, a fucking 280 shortstop with power upside and speed. Like, he's as close to a five-tool player as we have on our team right now. And I just think there's something here that we might not have realized before, and that this isn't even his final form.
Oh, I'm sorry. I've known Bo Bichett is going to be the guy for like 3 years. As soon as we got him, I was like, let's go. He's got the name. Mm-hmm. He's got the hair. He's got the swing. If you look at Josh Donaldson's swing next to Bo Bichette's swing,
that leg kick,
they look a lot similar. The timing with the leg kick, the way that their hips move back, and the way that his wrists move back as well. His wrists are so good.
Fast hands.
Like fast
looks like
hands.
A ball player.
And here's the thing. Oh, looks like a great ball player. And here's the thing. He's 21.
Yeah.
He's not like Josh, who was not broken down by the time he got to us, but he had played a lot of ball.
And he started as a catcher, too,
right?
He
was a little nicked up, yeah. We got a guy who swings like Josh Donaldson in his prime at 21, and he does. He's pretty fresh.
Yeah.
A++, anything less, you're wrong. I'm just kidding. You're not wrong, but you're wrong. The next category here... Rowdy Tellez gets his own. Is there no one else?
That's
Rowdy Tellez.
The Russell Crowe gladiator showed out right there.
Is there no one else? Rowdy, he had 21 dingers and 54 RBIs, but man, talk about streakiness.
And consistency.
Yeah, Patrick, we'll let you start on Rowdy here.
I mean, if there's ever a reason to keep Justin Smoke around for another year, Rowdy Tellez definitely did all the work for Justin Smoke to justify keeping him for another year. I know, like, we've talked about this before, and Tellez was never expected to be one of those guys in this resurgence of youth that we have. He was never expected to be a star. And his performance in 2018, riding that emotional high, was tremendous. And then we all quickly forgot about it when we actually saw Rowdy in action in 2019. He strikes out an alarming amount. He doesn't draw walks. He's a first baseman. He doesn't draw walks. I don't understand. He's got the power. He could definitely hit 30 home runs if he played a full season. But what the fuck is the point of a first baseman who hits 30 home runs and strikes out 28% of the time? And I mean, honestly, if we're really going to let him off the chain more and just let him swing like the Dickens, he's going to strike out a lot more. And I just... I don't know, man. I just don't see him being able to hit higher than 230, and that's just not good enough.
Yeah.
I mean,
so what's his grade?
C-.
Yeah, I'm going to agree with you on the C-. I do want to give him props, though. I was pleasantly shocked when I looked up his fielding metrics on Fangraphs, and he actually nets out to a positive value fielder with their UZR ranking, which is the ultimate zone rating.
Yeah. Holy shit.
I was actually kind of surprised by that. His defensive war is still negative, but in some metrics he's positive. So we'll give him props for being a better defender than I thought he was. The big places where we're losing value with him, you mentioned strikeouts. Also a terrible base runner. He's just so slow. And, yeah, not being able to draw walks. We were blessed for a long time, for a few years there, with Justin Smoke, who had the ability to just draw a ton of walks while also providing good leadership and some power numbers too, which is what Rowdy provides. He does have that power. You're right. But he also strikes out four times more than he walks. So let's...
Can I give a...
Yeah. For sure.
Can I give a quick shout out to my dad?
Yeah.
I remember my dad saying this when I was younger, watching players run around the base paths. He would say that Rowdy Tellez runs around the base paths like he has a grand piano on his back.
That
he's
is
just no matter how much true. Effort he puts in, he's so fucking slow.
Yeah. I would agree with that. I'm like I mentioned, C-. I think we'll see Rowdy Tellez get 500 to 600 at-bats next season. I think they'll just give him that one more year because is there no one else?
C-minus is all around for Rowdy. Let's be real here.
Yeah.
The next segment here, or next category, I should say, the guy who's going to start opening day on the bench, Reese McGuire. He is our backup catcher of the future, if that even exists, because it's Danny Jansen's job. Reese McGuire did some things that kind of pushed Danny Jansen, let's just put it at that, you know, kind of pushed him to be a little bit better. But let's be honest, Reese McGuire isn't leapfrogging Danny Jansen on our catcher depth chart anytime soon, but he's a serviceable backup and he played okay. I just think, again, it was Danny's rookie year. Reese is a young guy as well, but I'm going to give Reese just, again, a solid C.
I'm going to give Reese McGuire a B. He hit almost 300. Yeah, it's only 105 plate appearances. I know I'm going kind of against my past performances of grading where I usually give guys harsher grades. This guy is a great defender as well. With Danny Jansen and Reese McGuire as our two catchers moving forward, we've got a great defensive duo, and both guys are very good at calling games.
Mm-hmm.
They're both very good at receiving the ball. Danny Jansen ranks very high again in like pitch framing metrics, and Reese McGuire was slowly moving his way up the ranks as they got more data on him. Of course, only 30 games, so not a ton of innings for him to be rated too harshly defensively or positively, really. But I did like what I saw from him, more so than what we'd ever seen from him before in his past little call-up stints. I think he's got definite backup potential. I think the ceiling for Danny Jansen is still much higher. Reese McGuire is doing what prospects do in September, putting on a show. We saw it with Richard Urania last year. We saw it with Rowdy Tellez last year. This year it was Reese McGuire, so I'm gonna give him a B just because.
Patrick, what are you giving? What are you giving old Reese Puffs?
Reese is getting a B plus for me because he did everything that was expected of him in the time that we had him, and then some. At the very least, next year he's going to back up Danny Jansen, and if he hits as well as he did last season, he's going to see a much larger split than 130. Luke Melee, we'll talk about him later, but with him out of the picture, at the very worst, I see it being a 41-20 split, and that's at the absolute very worst, but I actually think it's going to be closer to 160, so 100 games for Danny, and then 60 games for Reese, and the reason why is because I think we're going to see Reese McGuire push Danny Jansen at the start of the season and in spring training, and they're going to want to let that play out. We talked about this several months ago in the podcast about the competition between Reese McGuire and Danny Jansen and how they will push each other and it will help them both elevate their games. And actually, I think it was Clayton who brought it up. But I mean, this was like 6 months ago. I think both of them are going to push each other to be better. And I think that's why Danny Jansen will be much better than he was this year, because he'll actually have a competent backup who can maybe not teach him things, but push him to be a better person at the plate.
Healthy competition is never a bad thing.
Yeah, I think it's a good thing. And I think that giving Reese McGuire 60 games to work with instead of 30, if he can hit that well, it might actually be a competition. It could be a split. It could be an 80-80 split. It's hard to say.
Next up here, Brandon Drury. I don't want to spend too much time on Brandon Drury here. Can we just agree that Brandon Drury gets an F? Round the horn Fs?
Round the horn F.
Round the horn Fs, Patrick?
Yep. this was his opportunity to demonstrate that he has the ability to hang in a lineup. He failed miserably. He hit well below the average that was expected. No defensive upside, really. He got to soak up a ton of MLB experience. Good for him. I think on another team that's going to be 30 to 40 games below 500, he could do the same thing. He'll soak up a ton of games on a shitty team.
So the 2020 Blue Jays.
No, I think he'll end up somewhere much, much worse off. I could see him in Baltimore, Kansas City, or Detroit, logging, a good solid 100 games, 120 games, playing on a team that has at least 3 to 5 more years before they can complete the first phase of a rebuild. But Brandon Drury is not going to be on this team next year, and if he is, we're going to lose 100 games because he just drags the team down. He's a below replacement level player. His WRC plus is 66.
As Jay and Dan would say, you blew it.
He did blow it. He had a chance and he blew it. F's all round. F's round the horn.
F's.
Justin Smoak. It's probably his last ride. Probably his last time as a Jay. Let's be honest here. He got that standing ovation during his last game for a reason. Fans can sense it. He's probably not going to be back next year, but you guys might agree with me on this or disagree with me. Sorry. I'm giving him an A, not for this year, but just as a general, as a Blue Jay, he's getting an A. He did everything we wanted him to do. He was solid. His last year wasn't that great. He had an off year this year. Let's be real here. But for everything he did for the Jays, I'm giving him an A. Off the field, he was great. He was never a distraction. He was great in the lineup. He had some clutch home runs.
His family's great, too.
He was just great. I loved him as a Jay. So Justin Smoak, for this season, he's getting like a C-. You know what? C. He had 22 dingers. He's getting a C for me for this season. His tenure as a Jay is getting an A for me.
I'm going to give his wife an A on Twitter because she is hilarious.
She is.
Yeah, she is the best. But also, for this season, a C. His walk rate still the highest of his career. With some help in the lineup consistently around him, probably hits a little bit better. He was bothered by a quad injury a lot of the year. Just never really got over that. His strikeout rate was also low. Just the power numbers slipped a little bit for old Smokey. His BABIP was terrible. A lot of bad luck. The shift is killing him. His defense is deteriorating quite rapidly, as it does for older players. It's going to happen. He's only 32, almost 33, but yeah, I'll give him the C. But like you said, for a Blue Jays career, if this is really the end for Smokey, we got more out of him than we ever could have hoped to. He was one of those guys who was just completely average when he was with the Mariners and he started with Texas. I'm going to give him an A for his Blue Jays career.
A human being, A for his time in Toronto, C- this year. I mean, the body's made out of hamburger meat, eventually breaks down. It happens to us all. Eventually, we are told that we can no longer play this game. I don't think Smoak is quite there yet, but, have him go sign a 1 or 2 year deal on a team that's going to be 30, 40 games below 500. So he'll be in Baltimore or Detroit or Kansas City or maybe Texas, maybe Seattle next year. I think those are all teams that aren't going to be much better than what they were. I mean, I think Texas will be worse next year because I hate them. I don't know. Isn't Justin Smoke from Texas?
The Rangers. That's a good reason, guys.
Yeah, he was drafted by the Rangers. He didn't play a full year there. They traded him to Seattle.
Mm-hmm. I think he's still got 3 good years left in him. Not good years, but he's got 3 years left in him on just, you know, being a backup first base DH kind of guy. Last but least, by Luke Maley. F's round the horn.
F minus.
F's minuses round the horn here. Anyone want to touch on Luke Maley?
I don't want to touch him at all.
I'm done with Luke Maley. Such a tease.
Not really.
Yeah, he had potential to be pretty good. Last year, he was like, oh, man, this Luke Maley guy.
I remember, yeah, that was a big thing, and yeah. I was always like,
now it's just
guys.
Like, Luke Maley, see you later. There's zero chance he's going to be back next year with Maguire and Jansen playing as well as they did.
He might be in a minor league contract in AAA Buffalo. We'll
true.
See.
Yeah, Luke Maley, anything else on Luke Maley?
F. But you never know. Imagine this scenario. Danny Jansen, Reese McGuire, and I don't even know who our catchers are in AAA. I mean, one of them was Luke Maley, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So let's just imagine that all the catchers that we have in our entire system all line up and are mysteriously like hit by the same bus.
Whoa.
That happens to be driven by Luke Maley, and they all tear their MCLs and are out for like 6 months.
How do you only tear your MCL if you get hit by a bus?
I don't know.
It's a calculated bus strike.
Even with all those injuries, Luke Maley will still probably share a split next year.
Are they like lying on the ground and the bus runs over one of their knees? Like they got one behind the back?
They do it all voluntarily because they want Luke Maley to have more playing time, but it would take literally every catcher from AA up to MLB to tear their MCL.
League-wide.
Yeah, like a league-wide.
Is there no one else?
In order for Luke Maley to be back in an MLB lineup as a catcher.
Yeah, it's not going to happen.
Well, with that awesome mental image, we'll call it a podcast. thanks for listening, whether it be on iTunes or Google Podcasts, TuneIn, Stitcher, Spotify, Anchor, wherever you listen. Thanks a bunch. Again, give us a review. Share us on Facebook and Twitter. Get the street cred up. We'd really appreciate it. If you give us a review or you like us on Facebook or you share it or something like that, take a screenshot and send it to us on social media. We will give you a Bat Flips and Maple Dips custom t-shirt.
Wow.
It'll just be a white t-shirt with some Sharpie written on it at BFMD Podcast or something like that. But we'll give you some swag. If you show us that you're sharing our stuff and giving us reviews, we'll give you some gear. We'll give you some custom gear signed by us, made out of Sharpies and white t-shirts. For Justin and Patrick, that's it for us. Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, or at BFMD Podcast. What's the goodbye song today there?
The goodbye song is from one of my favorite childhood bands and still one of the greatest groups out there, Weezer, Say It Ain't So.
See you later.
Oh, yeah. So now